ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hey everyone, I hope you all are doing well. This is Ian Babcock, your host of Chat by the Pitch. Thanks for tuning in this week. This is part two with Brendan Lee. Before we dive into this, just remember there is background noise, and I'm sorry about that. But listen to the messages he shares. This is such a great conversation we had. So let's start this chat and head to the...
What is your current role with Futsal then? If I'm remembering right in my research, you are heavily involved with forming leagues, if I'm not mistaken, and trying to create a larger, broader community here in the DFW area. So how are you working towards that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've recently been appointed director of Futsal at Alpha Forms. So what I do there is, you know, help curate the curriculum, create a futsal culture there, or refine a futsal culture because their futsal culture has already been there, provide a little bit of a refinement to it, and continue to push those players to use futsal as a training modality for the football, but also give insight and inspiration and education in futsal for the futsal player. I'm also a director at United Futsal, which is a national governing body. Again, same kind of thing there. Help with implementation of curriculums, work with coaches here and abroad to provide futsal courses, futsal trainings. We provide them at events. And so I have a network of futsal here and kind of across the country that, you know, continuing to push, same as everyone else that does futsal, just the culture of futsal and, you know, how it's supportive and how it's viewed and what the perspective is. I don't, in my opinion, I think it's the best way, you know, to kind of piggyback off of what you're mentioning there as far as how the individual player is developed. And regardless, whatever game they choose to play, it could be futsal, it could be soccer, it could be both. But I think immensely helpful in their development as a player from a tactical standpoint, from a technical standpoint, from a situational standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, from a mentality standpoint. I mean, I think there's too many benefits that come along with the game. But that's my perspective. I'm definitely not a futsal versus football kind of guy. Like I'm not one of those guys that tries to wage war on soccer. I have vast knowledge in both. And for me, you know, as a person, as a player, as a coach, as a mentor, they live harmoniously. Some people cater more towards futsal, some people cater more towards football. And whatever their training philosophies and modalities are, you know, everyone's entitled to, you know, how that is. For me, to push the culture and community of futsal is to get it out to as many as possible and get people introduced to futsal from, you know, very early stages, to provide opportunity to players that want to play at a higher level. I also have my own training business, Project 214. That's another initiative that I'm working on, slow but steady. Starting out now is futsal trainings. Collaborations are soon to come as far as collaborating with, you know, local cities on hosting leagues, tournaments, clinics, things of that nature. And then hopefully being able to push maybe a different perspective on the game, which is, you know, kind of mindfulness thing. There are pieces of the game where the kids, even at younger ages now, are and you see it at professional stages. I think it's probably been highlighted maybe more recently. The mindfulness in terms of, you know, how do you operate on a day-to-day? You know, how do you handle pressure? How do you handle stress and anxiety? How do you handle a bad training session? So really kind of tapping into, I think, what makes a complete player and helps boost that mentality at whatever level you want to be at. I mean, if you're a kid that loves to play futsal or soccer at a level of, you know, you just like to go to your local rec, you'd like to play your games on the weekends, and that's like your Champions League, then I think by all means, like, that should be, you know, where you put all your focus into it. If anything stems from that, great. If you're a player that's like, I want to go to the very top, I think that comes with a whole set of, like, tools that are necessary to handle that responsibility and handle that pressure and handle what comes with that. There's a lot of sacrifice that comes with that, and sometimes can be lonely. And so if there's tools that you can harbor and you know, push for yourself individually on a day-to-day basis, if there's guidance that you have from a mentor, you're going to talk you through some of those pressures or things that you experience as a player at a high level, or even just as a, you know, a player in general. I think mindfulness is going to be a big component of what I do. That maybe is a little bit different and outside of some of the different futsal trainings and different, you know, great futsal trainings and big, great futsal communities that we have here in the DFW Metroplex. I don't certainly, you know, expect to be a monopoly of any sorts. I want to grow and build the community as organically and as authentically as possible. I'm a giver. I love to provide, even if it's, you know, the futsal community is tight-knit and close and supportive and connected. Anytime we can help each other out, we do. So you'll see me out at City Futsal helping with D7 Futsal. You'll help me. You'll see me out with Pablo De Silva, helping out with Pablo De Silva Futsal. So again, I love to help out anywhere I can. I have my own kind of entity or business profile, if you want to call it that, where, again, slowly but surely want to build, again, another point of access for futsal training, futsal development, and then as well as I'll continue to build this portion of it, but the mindfulness piece where, you know, players potentially coaches, parents alike, can get a little bit of insight on how to manage and handle maybe certain situations that players are going through, or even from like a mentor guidance perspective, how to look. So that's definitely on the up and coming. But I'm currently, you know, hosting and pushing futsal trainings for Project 214. And again, director of futsal for Alpha Forms, which is a huge community, great community. Ron Hodgson has been wonderful in this whole process. Has really given me the green light to indulge and push their club, their perspective, their philosophy, to help push the entire culture of that club and that brand, you know, forward. So I'm really happy to be doing that as well. So that's the extent of futsal and how I'm trying to impact the community at the moment. So that's where I'm at.
Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about futsal, then we'll move on to a topic because you've mentioned it several times, and actually, it's a topic dear to my heart too. So, as you're pushing Project 214 and with and being the director of for a futsal with Alpha Forms and a director at United Futsal, how has your perspective of the game changed in these roles? Because I feel as you kind of move up the ladder in coaching and viewpoints of how things are run, how you interact with players and how you interact with coaches and parents drastically change. And it doesn't matter what the business is, corporate or youth sports, whatever it may be. I can only come from business world, but I can only imagine it's more impactful on your side because you're actually affecting youth and the future of our culture here to building futsal and football as one culture. How has those roles impact you as a coach and as an influence in the community? Because at the end of the day, you're influencing the perspective of these games that are being played.
Absolutely. The thing that I recognize is youth is youth, right? I mean, kids are kids. A kid here versus a kid in Spain versus a kid in, you know, wherever is still a kid. And I think that's what, like, I double down on the most. Kids want to challenge, kids want to learn, but they're still kids. So for me, as a coach and as a mentor, as a person, I always try to make some sort of connection or rapport with the kid. And that's been the same everywhere. So obviously having kind of my futsal impact in a few different places, my ultimate goal is to, again, push futsal in a positive capacity, continue to push a positive, and I say positive, not meaning you have to be happy all the time. Positive as in the trajectory is positive. And when there are things that are hard, how are we managing and moving through them? And some of that may be like a push or discipline or some sort of challenge where it's difficult and there's a lot of emotion involved, or there's some sort of evolution where you're having to shed maybe a former version of yourself to help expand this enlightened or elevated version of yourself as a person, as a player. So for me, using futsal as a vehicle for that has been really what allows me to connect all those different pieces together, because it's what I truly love to do. I love to be a bridge for players to get from whatever their next step is, from where they're at to whatever their next step is. And that's always been something that I've talked about with my wife, with anybody that's you know, gotten involved with me or I've worked with. I just want to be, you know, known as a futsal guy or known as a soccer guy that helps, you know, provide a pathway or a bridge to help players, the youth, get from one player or from one step to the next, regardless of what that is. And I think that's the thing that I always, from a coach, from you know, in any environment, I think if those things happen, regardless of like how the business is run or however it looks, that part always makes sense, right? Sometimes it can be, you know, when you start to, you know, take yourself out of the game or off the court or what have you, sometimes it can get convoluted. But I think again, when I really get to work with kids, regardless of, again, where it's at or language barriers or what have you, I always try to create that connection rapport and figure out, what does this player need? Do they need that push? Do they need the discipline? Do they need someone that's militant? I have that capacity. Do they need someone that's a little bit lighter? Right? I have that capacity. Do they need someone that's a little bit of in between? I have that capacity. And so to be able to, again, this is a decade plus of trying to curate that voice and curate that coaching profile and personality for myself. I try to cater to as many as possible, but at the end of the day, I'm not foolish to think that, you know, I'm the end all be all. Like you mentioned earlier before, I mean, coaches outgrow players, players outgrow coaches. I think to a certain capacity, depending on the perspective or depending on the pathway or career of the player, I think I can be a massive help. But that's all going to be dependent on the player and the relationship too. So for me, kind of balancing all three of those different roles is, you know, really the youth. Like, youth is youth. Like, they're kids, right? They come from this background over here, and they're still kids. Like, a kid who's seven in New York is still a kid that's seven here in Dallas. And there's a lot of similarities that, you know, can stem between them. There's going to be cultural differences, sure, from where they come from, where their upbringing is. But I think at the end of the day, you know, the quicker that I can build that rapport within that community is where I make the most impact, and how I can provide myself to be that mentor and guidance for them, and help them get the best out of what they need to get their best out of. You know, if they're having a bad day, if they're having a good day. So it's really kind of, when I think about balancing those different roles or how I see that coaching perspective, like, I always look at youth as youth, kids are kids, be patient with that process, figure out a way to connect with them, because I think anybody that listens to this podcast, that listens to other podcasts, that plays in youth soccer here in North Texas or anywhere else, they probably have that one guide, mentor, coach that they click with, and that's just their person. Sometimes it takes bouncing around to figure who that person is. Sometimes you've got a tribe of them. I want to be a person that makes sense for the player. I have no reservations about, okay, if I'm not that person, I care about the player's pathway, like, absolutely wholeheartedly. It's not an ego thing for me. It's double down on the youth, because youth is youth. The kids are kids. They have their own pathway. It's not my pathway. I've played my soccer. I know I've played my futsal. I've played indoor soccer. That may not be their journey. They may need a different push. They may need a different direction than what my direction is. So what is it that they're saying? What is their why? Again, to kind of piece all this together, what is their why? As a coach, how do I listen to that? Where do they want to go? How do I provide that information for them?
Awesome. You've mentioned it several times, and I feel like your mission with everything that you're working on is leading towards this. And this topic is very near and dear to my heart, mindfulness with youth athletes. I spent 2 hours talking to a sports psychologist recently. She talked about mindfulness, and I had her describe it, and it's the vision and non-judgmental point of going through a process. I mean, that was the nitty-gritty. I'm trying to find my notes. I'm trying to see if I can find it. Mindfulness is being in the present with no judgment, and that's how she described mindfulness. And I thought it was very interesting, because I feel like our youth today are being judged in every aspect, and they're setting themselves up to be judged in every aspect because of social media. And social media just puts them in the crosshairs for judgment by everyone. I mean, it doesn't matter what age, but our youth need to learn how to live in the present with no judgment. Sure. As a parent, we have to learn to let our players play in a non-judgmental zone. It's when I talked to her, it was talking about visualization and how important that process is for our athletes, and not just living in the perfect world, but living through the process of making mistakes. I now try to talk to my son, he's 9, and trying to teach him this stuff. It's learning, okay, but I want you to go pretend you're in your game today and go through your passing. You made a bad pass. What are you going to do? Like, visualize what you're going to do next. Think about it. See what your body motions are going to be. And that all plays a part into this huge part that nothing's perfect, nothing is done absolutely 100% the same every time. But mindfulness is such a huge topic. What would you say as someone now that's played for over 20 years has helped you gravitate to understand this better, to help players or parents understand the other side of this equation? Because I have a 9-year-old and my biggest fear is the stress of the game will just ruin his love and continue fostering the love of the game will be ruined by the lack of mindfulness, the lack of support and things along that line, because I feel like there's added stress already there. And how can we help?
Absolutely. Yeah. This one, I mentioned it before with my parents, and my pathway is, like you mentioned, it's not perfect. You know, there are parts of it that my parents did, you know, I was really grateful that they just stood on the sidelines. You know, we didn't have gestures on the sidelines, my father and I, or my mother and I. And, you know, I was just in the game. I was just presently in the game. And, you know, as a player growing up, I was certainly like that head case that was always thinking about, okay, the next mistake and like how, like the magnitude of that next mistake, or if I had a mistake, you know, what that would mean for me or how I would get yelled at. For me, the way I handled that was like, as best I can, just try to make the next one better, right? I mean, it's always just about the next one. You know, I don't know that it's necessarily like forget about it more so than it is about, like, to be present is hard, right? It's so difficult, you know, and you mentioned visualization. And even just like now, my day-to-day, and I'll say this probably started in college, my day-to-day for a game, if there's a huge game that's happening, there's certainly like an aura around the day and an energy around the day that's like, you've got a big game today. But I treat every day the same way. You know, like, why? For some players, they need a ritual. They have superstitions. They have a certain routine. And I think that's like, you know, powerful for them. I think I remember reading about, I remember reading about Messi treating every single day as like a regular day. You know, like, why would he make this day any different than the next day because of the soccer game? And that's not to take away from the importance of the soccer game or what he loves or what you love or anything in that nature. But I treat every day like the same day. Then I actually am just going out to play a game, which I love to play, which is what it feels like when I play. Now, again, sometimes days are different. Days are off. You get a little bit more in your head. You get a little bit out of your head. The spectrum and the balance of that shifts, right? Sometimes I'm a little bit too loose. I'm too lackadaisical. There's times where I'm like way too focused. I'm really tight, right? I'm really focused on everything going on that's happening. At the end of the day, you know, control what you can control is what I tell kids. Like, what is your responsibility today? Like, when you play, when you train, what can you manage? What can you handle? I can't manage how the other kids are going to play. Like, individually, as a player, it's not my responsibility. First and foremost, I think I owe it to myself to be responsible for what I need to be responsible for. I don't need to go talk to that kid over there about how to do this thing until I get my thing done right. Like, until I give myself that time, until I give myself that care and that focus, it doesn't need to be spread out to someone else. And again, I think it's a bit of a selfish mentality, but at the same time, if I'm going to give my 100% best and be able to build myself up enough to be able to give to somebody else, like, I have to start somewhere, right? And I've really started to focus on, like, if I'm feeling at peace, if I'm feeling calm, if I'm treating a day like a regular day, and seeing my kids, you know, my wife, we're having a good time, just trying to be present. And the life of a coach is like, we've got parents, we've got emails, I mean, everything, right? I mean, like, I try to do my very best about setting the work cycle for the work cycle without being disrespectful to anybody else, putting out fires, all of that, and then balancing all of it. And everyone's balance is a little bit different. But in terms of the youth, I think control what you can control. I think that gives you less to think about in terms of what you feel like you have to carry. Like, I can't control how the coach is going to think about me. I can't control how the coach is going to scream or yell at me or encourage me or help me, right? I can only try to help myself based on what I know based on what's being told to me. I can only do my very best. If I do my very best, then I'll see what happens after that. And I think that gives players a way to focus on kind of that one thing, especially, you know, the youth level, right? Their brains are all over the place anyway. So it's, I think most of the time, you know, myself included, we just want our kids to focus. But I've come to realize, even for like mindfulness for my kid, it's like my kid is angry, right? They're showing anger. They're frustrated. They're to some extent, I'll say destructive, throwing something or whatever. For me to kind of counteract that with like anger doesn't feel like it's the right answer. It doesn't feel like it solves anything. It feels like it heightens it, or if it's you know, use the analogy, you know, add fuel to the fire. So when I think about coaching and I think about the player and I think about someone who's frustrated or disinterested or sad or just doesn't look like they're in it, for me as a coach and as a mentor, I don't take that personally. That kid needs something. They need something, right? And it, whatever you think it is, I don't think it's like my choice to decide. It's more of like, okay, what is this? How do I support this kid today? And again, at the higher stages that you play, some of that demand is unreasonable. Some of that you do have to kind of put away, right? But you have to put it away somewhere where it can be accessed again, to where we can talk about it at a different point. Otherwise, it just kind of harbors. Same with the kids, right? In a game, I may have to, my emotions, my behaviors, my interactions may be, I want you to go get that ball. I want you to go score. You had it right there when you do it. And then to take a moment and really think about, okay, well, what happened there? And I do this a lot for myself. When I coach on the sideline, when I do a training session, I reflect a lot to say, like, what could I have done better? Not in a sense of, like, because I want to be the best, or it's more of, like, how do I serve this group better when it feels like this? Like, what did I mean in order to serve this group better? Was I hungry? Was I a little bit tired? Was I yelling too much? Were my activities a little bit too stagnant? Do I need to plan more? You know, so I think across the board, like, that reflection is super important, but also giving yourself less to think about will allow you to be a little bit more present. And that doesn't mean you have to be, like, not to be ambivalent, right, in order to be present, right? It can be a focus, like, deciding where you're going to put your focus and your time in order to be present. From a game day, from a training session, from school, from a test, from all of that. Mindfulness, I mean, you mentioned visualization of being present. I mean, I don't know if this tip is going to help anybody else out, but before, I mean, I've been doing this since SMU days. You know, when you do get to walk out and have that national anthem, get to be under the lights, or, you know, get to be a part of that kind of ritual when you're playing, you know, at whatever level you're playing at. If you get the chance to do that, I always take that moment of the national anthem to visualize, sometimes about the game, sometimes not even about the game, just something that, what allows me to be present? What do I love? Like, am I, like, take time to love where I'm at this moment. I'm about to play this thing that I love to do. Think about the people that I love in my life. And how do I really just indulge, like, and just enjoy this moment? Like, how do I, this, whatever's about to happen is going to happen. I don't know what the score is going to be. I don't know if I'm going to score. I visualize scoring, but I visualize passing. I visualize making a tackle. I visualize doing something that's going to help the team, right? Just to get my mindset there. But just really love what you do. Because for me, it's like, man, there's going to be times when it's stressful, and it's easy to say. It's pretty, nonchalant and cliche, but love what you do. It's like, love doesn't always have to be this, like, mushy-gushy feeling, right? Love can just, like, love can be hard. Like, you know, like, at the end of the day, like, you still love to do it. Like, it's hard, right? I mean, there's challenges that come along with love. But at the end of the day, like, if you still can give to that thing, and you can still get better to that thing, it's not, you know, necessarily detrimental to you, right? You know, how do you get better the next day? How do you grow from it the next day? And like, mindfulness is the thing that is super, super key for me in all of that, in my regular day-to-day journaling, reflection, writing down things that I want from a life perspective, maybe not from like a frivolous, indulgent perspective, but more of like what I would like my life and my career to look like, or what I want my game to look like, or what I want, you know, this community that I'm trying to be a part of, what I want that to look like and my impact and all of that. So, you know, I think, again, to be present and to visualize that presence and to visualize, like, and to really, like I say it, but like really lean into like love. I mean, like, love is like, I think it's underrated. Like, I think it's like, especially in sport, it's like, man, to love is like, it's not tough. It's not, love doesn't get you, but it's like, again, it doesn't have to be this mushy gushy. Like, you can just love the thing that you want, and then you could love to want to go hard. Like, you could love to want to be like that tough player. Like, you could just love that, and that's love. And I think that part is underrated, you know what I mean? Just to like even just say it out loud or talk about that. Like, I love to coach futsal. You know, some people don't like futsal, don't think it works. It's not for me to try and change their perspective. I just love to do it, so I keep at it. And, you know, I'm thankful to have continued to love futsal for as long as I've loved, and then be able to turn this into a career that's going to be, you know, my career for decades more, and get into places and environments where I get to promote that and progress that, you know, for the youth, which is what I care about, right? Now with Alpha Forms, which is amazing. Any others outside of that, outside of Alpha Forms that want to train Project 214 here or elsewhere? I travel, I try to coach and connect with my futsal networks, with United Futsal, all the players and lives that I get to impact there, families I get to impact. It's like, how do I present this like love of what I love to do, and how do I help those players find, not find, but maybe just continue to love like what they love to do, like this thing that they love to do, that they put so much time into.
I hate going back always to past interviews, but David, it was really hard to edit his episode because he hit on so many little true little nuggets. And as parents of kids, we tend to forget that we aren't viewing the game through their eyes. And he talked about if you're playing Monopoly or Yahtzee, whatever it may be, you can play by your own made up rules. Then you can add in real rules as you go along. And it changes the perspective of the game. We as parents see it through our eyes, and most of our parents don't understand this beautiful game because we don't have soccer backgrounds. We only understand what we learn and, in my case, obsess over. And some parents are like that. Some parents only understand when they go what they learn from the pitch when they're at it watching these matches. And I think we forget we need to view it through the player's eyes. And I think you talked about it. It's that love, and it has to talk about it. It's not like the mushy love. It is talking about, it's hard to describe. Like you said, it's more than just like, it's the excitement. It's that even though you hate it in this moment, you still want to be out there doing it, and type of mentality. And but David said, like, we have to view it through their eyes. So if we take the game and give them all these parameters they have to play by, that's what they're going to see the game as, versus it eliminates the excitement of the game. But going how this ties to mindfulness, if we only give them the direction that we understand of mindfulness and not allow them to have coaches like you in front of them and actually share with them indirectly to understand mindfulness, I think parents will ruin their players. I hate to say it like that, but ruin their players' view of themselves in this game, because the game is not perfect. It's just doing it the best that you can. And it's a matter of letting them, you said it several times, just play the game. I think that was your, at a young age, you talked about it, and looking at it in this conversation, you just wanted to play the game. You didn't care who it was with, what age group it was with. You just wanted to play. You didn't care if it was playing at a very high level or technical level. You just wanted to play. And as time goes on, that will change as your perspective goes. And how I think you learned it indirectly by accident, and you were able to apply it to the rest of your life because of the love that your parents allowed you to foster. But now you're looking, now you're trying to, and I'm doing a psychological analysis here, and I shouldn't be,
No, this
of
is
that
fun.
moment of that moment of your life and how it has played and sent you on this trajectory to be successful where you're at today. And how would you tell parents to, like, I hate to say it, to back off and let them view the game through their eyes so they can understand it? Because as soon as we as parents interject, we kind of warp the view the coach might be playing or planning for those players to be successful later on.
Absolutely. I think as parents and as a coach, like, all of us are really quick to correct, right? And I think that maybe out of fear, because we don't want our kids to be less so or be lower than what we believe them to be. I remember hearing in an interview I can't remember who it was. I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson. And he's talking about kids' brain pathways, speech and absence. And a lot of parents, myself included, are quick to say, like, let's say a kid has an egg, right? You don't want them to drop the egg because it'll break and make a mess, this, that, whatever. But when we, so you tell the kid, right, don't drop the egg or don't even have the egg, right? Then they never get to figure out, like, when they drop it. And in hindsight, like, it's an egg, right? You're going to be able to pick it up, right? It's going to break. You're going to have more eggs. You'll be able to find more eggs. Think about what, and I do this now, it's like, think about how many creative pathways or synapses that I just closed off and opportunities for them to explore. Okay, this thing's gooey. Oh, the shell is hard. There's something inside. What is, like, all these different questions that they probably be asking themselves after, like, observing the situation happen or just experiencing or knowing, oh, this could break. I didn't know it could break, right? Because, again, kids only know what they know, right? I think a lot of coaches are trying to impose, like, what they know onto the kid, but it's like, I have parents and coaches and, you know, players talk to me about, like, well, my coach told me this, but, like, I have, you know, we never worked on it, you know? It's like, kids can only know what you teach them, and it's really difficult for them to pick up on something that's not been learned. And it's really important to, again, one, observe and present the idea, present the environment for the kid to, again, present the ideas. I always ask questions. What did you see? Why did you do this? What was going through your head? And allowing the kid to be like, not feel like if they've made a mistake, let's call it a mistake, right? They lost the ball or something. Instead of me being like, don't do that. Okay, well, I just cut off that one option that they had that could have led to, if executed well, could have led to a bunch of other things, right? But now I'm telling them not to do this, and now it's going to completely change the way they think about the game, completely change their perspective on what to do and to be scared of this situation, right? But I don't want them to be scared of the situation. I want them to, like, understand the situation to allow them to be empowered to be like, okay, this is happening. I know that this is going to happen. Same with the egg. I've broken it before. I know if I drop it, it's going to break. Do I want to break it? Okay, maybe. I don't know. Do I want to dribble straight? If I dribble straight and this person comes here, okay, well, maybe I have to do this thing, right? Again, there's so many different creative pathways that coaches are quick to cut off, myself included. Right? I'm not saying I'm like this, like, untouchable coach, because I know I've got my flaws. But I always try to be very keen on, like, what it, like, asking questions. What did they see? Seeing it from their perspective, like you and David mentioned. And then allow their creative process and pathway to still be creative and grow and let them see the game they want to see the game. I mean, guys like Neymar and, you know, and Ronaldinho, and like these, like, players, not just Brazilian, but these creative players that are seeing these things, like, they broke the barrier, they broke the mold on what is being maybe taught, you know, oh, you don't receive it this way because you're not going to be able to do whatever. It's like, why? There's probably plenty of examples of somebody receiving this ball this way and then getting out of it successfully. So what is your rebuttal to that? You know, like, you know, the biggest thing I hear sometimes is, like, bottom of the foot. You know, how does that help in soccer? It's like, you look at so many people using bottom of the foot. I mean, there's so many different, like, articles or different plays of the game where sole of the foot is integral to the game. For goalies, for players that are on the outside, right? I mean, this is just that's like a small snippet of like what futsal and football, like what they share together. But it's like, if you tell them don't, then they never do it. And now like you've shut down all these creative moments that have been taken away because of this one idea. And I think if you can really observe, really see the player, parents, just be observe first before you're quick to react and correct, right? Because we want to be like, no, she should have done this. And, you know, it's like my first thing for that for parents when I talk, when they tell me, like, oh, you should have done this, which should have done, okay, well, let's switch spots and then I'll watch you do it and see how it goes. And it's, you know, oh, no, it's fine. It's like, okay. And that's not to be a jerk. That's more of like, let's really understand where each other's at and our perspectives. And let's really understand where we're at. And like, you put yourself in my shoes, I put myself in your shoes. Put yourself in the kid's shoes, seeing it from their perspective, like you and Dave are talking about, and see, okay, well, why, you know, they did this, right? How did they do this? Why did they do this? When did they do this? Could it work in a different situation? Do I have to just completely shut it down? Right? There's times where you do shut it down, right? Because you have to focus on one moment, but not to completely close them off, but to, when I try to do it, and again, I'm not perfect, is I try to allow to understand different situations that can stem from this idea. You lost the ball, fine with me. You can lose the ball, that's not a big deal. But okay, from here, what could we do next time? That way, when you get into the situation, you're not afraid of it. You're just thinking about the other thing that I could do, right?
Right. And it's a matter of, I have learned, even as a parent, it was one of the first things that I took from my grassroots coaching, because I did do my grassroots. And then when I talked to a couple of coaches, they go, stop telling them what to do and start asking the question, why? Why are you doing it this way? Or what is another way of thinking through this process? Or did you see this or did you see that? Because once you start giving the direction, they lose the creativity moment. And with all the questions you start asking, and it's I don't know how to describe it. It's not even reverse psychology. It is more of trying to force them to see the different angles, because they might see a completely different angle than what you're asking, but it will be the right answer still. The correct, I don't know how to phrase it. It'll be there's, because at certain times there's no wrong answer. It is, there might just be a better answer, right? or a different perspective might be the better way of putting it with sports, is because like you said, yeah, you take the touch wrong, this touch this way, but is it wrong? No, it might put you in this circumstances, but how do you learn to escape that if you've never been in it? And we as parents tend not to see that. And I feel like the whole point of this podcast is to help educate parents, but I think players need to hear that themselves too, that it's okay to be doing something that goes against the grain, because if it works, you learn something new. And if it fails, you still learn something new, because that method in that moment did not work. But maybe next time when you're put in that circumstance, take the touch the same way, it will work because you figured out a new avenue to go down. And I feel like I've said this in probably, I don't know how many interviews now, I always view American soccer as turning into the old Soviet Union and Rocky, where you're training them to do a certain thing a certain way, and it has to be done in this mechanical, robotic manner, and it takes away that creativity. And I feel like a lot of coaches, especially here in North Texas, are heading down that path because they have to win. And if they don't win, they lose their, they lose 75% of their team in a year or 6 months, whatever it may be. And so
you kind of wish that everyone would turn out like Rocky did at the end of that movie, you know? Like,
right.
You can change, you know, we can all change and kind of have that mentality and perspective. But I think, again, there's a lot of pressure to, again, you know, win, to be the best. I can tell you, and you know, I think any player would tell you this, how many games they've lost before they've won, you know, or how many games that, you know, at 8, 9 that, you know, that I've lost. I can't even tell you which ones are important or which ones aren't, right? I can tell you about games that I've lost that were super important to me for one way or another. But certainly winning is a maybe a correlation to, you know, how success is going, but it depends on what role you play into it, right? I mean, I could, right. There's games that I've won where I sat on the bench, right? But it doesn't mean I'm a great player. I didn't really, you know, I didn't do any, I wasn't out there. And I think that perspective, again, is like, do I play and can I lose? And that, is that all right? Or am I a winner, but I'm sitting on the bench? I'm not really, am I really the winner? Or am I just kind of like riding the coattail right now? So again, perspective is everything. But I mean, you're right. I mean, futsal is meant to, I mean, there are certain things in both games where they are structured. There are things that you do a certain way in order to create a certain outcome. But from that, once you have that outcome and once you maybe perfected a technique or something like that, it's yours to choose how you utilize it. It's yours to choose how you apply it. Futsal certainly is meant to create or provide an opportunity to not be a robot, to not be robotic, to not just follow the rules all the time, to break some rules, to do something that's different. And, you know, to some extent, maybe that's why futsal doesn't catch on as quickly as it does, right? It's a little bit against the grain. How could it work? How could it help soccer? How could it make my kid better, right? You know, there's, you guys play on a court, use a bottom of your foot, it's a heavy ball. You know, there's all these questions that you know, time and time again that I answer, you know, you know, which again, rightfully so, but at the same time, it's, you know, there's always reasons why I can explain, but at the end of the day, it's really going to be what the player believes, how the parent supports, how what they believe. Again, like you said, to go against the grain, I think is okay, right? You don't have to fall. If everyone's in the same line or in the same lane, like, how do you get seen, right? How does anyone see, right? So I think you hit the nail on the head there with that comment.
It gets very fascinating because I look at more so now the both sides of the argument. It's, am I saying something that's going to distract my player so much that it completely makes them completely lose focus of what they're doing, versus am I being more encouraging and let them go through their creative failure, as I like to call it? Because at the end of the day, you learn by drawing, and is a great example, you learn by your failures, and you're still being creative how you're viewing it, but over time the detail work gets better. And I feel like when parents take that approach to a sport, there's kids that have natural talent, and that only goes so far, then they have to foster that to go farther. I feel like parents need to take the step back and actually listen and not so much dictate. I think players ultimately dictate what they want. And I think that's so important for parents to step back and say, I need to realize my player right now will not be the best form of themselves in 20 years from now, because this is no longer their love. I think parents get hung up, or my kid's an athlete and this is how they're going to perform. I think the best quote I've heard so far is that we need to stop focusing on having our kids being the Messis, the Ronaldos, whoever it may be, Holland, using players today, or Pele, whoever it may be, who was our inspiration, that we need to make sure that they understand they need to be the best. I tell Landon he needs to be the best Landon he needs to be, the last Babcock, not because you could, if you only look up to that person, you'll never surpass them. You need to look up into yourself more than looking up to these players. Look up to them for their perspective of the game, but be the best you at the end of the day. And I think that goes back to mindfulness, is teaching them to love themselves and love the game in different avenues, like you talked about. If you have like anything to add to that, or are you?
Yeah, I mean, Project 214 is something that I've wanted to build based on this idea, and I've had it for a long time. I've been in my futsal career, you know, being a part of different organizations, educating myself, making sure that I'm absorbing as much as I can before I go out on my own. Finally have, you know, had the courage to go out on my own. And that's the motto. I mean, it's find you, build you, be you. A lot of that is like, you know, find yourself. Well, what kind of player am I? Okay, well, I know what kind of player I am. Okay, build on that, right? What is that? What does that process look like? What's your project, right? What goes into that project? How do you manage that project? What are you doing to get better at that? at the end of the day, once you put all those three things together, then there's feedback. It's I think it's so underrated that to be yourself. And like, that's like the coolest version, however you want to look at it. Like, that's the coolest version of you is like just to be yourself. Like, whether that be weird or goofy or super happy, or I think it's society wants you to conform to be a certain way. And there's some extent, right? You're going to be a certain way. You're going to act a certain way in certain environments. But again, to be you, to really, again, we said non-judgmental. I mean, that's massive. I mean, to just like be you in any capacity. I always think about like, if kids are allowed to be themselves in any capacity, futsal aside, think about the potential. And like, if they give their best and they're themselves and feel themselves the whole time, how much more they can accomplish and what they could really create for the world, right? Not for anybody else, but for themselves, but for the world too. And like what they'd be capable of, right? Just to be themselves. And think about how many players like shelter or don't let the full selves out in a game or in a training session because they're afraid or scared or they lack courage or they don't have the support or they're not given the platform to play a certain way or be a certain way. And yeah, Project 214, there's certainly, again, that's the idea. I use futsal as a vehicle to, again, find the type of player you are. If it's futsal, great. If it's not, no worries, right? I'll help with that. If it's, you know, then how do you build that? And then how do you be that? Just every day, just be that, because that's going to give you the best, coolest, most awesome version of you that it's going to be. Like, you know, there's not going to be another you, right? Like, make the best of that one. Like, you just make the best of that one.
I love it. So my last question, and I'll give you back the rest of your time. You can take as long as you need to answer it. Is who has been your greatest influence? You as a player. And now, since you're on the other side of this aspect, I mean, you're still playing, but who's your greatest influence as a coach?
As a player, definitely, this one's twofold. It's my mom and my dad. And again, yeah, it's pretty cliche, but again, they provided, and then I look at what parents do now for their kids, and like, man, there are some parents and some families that can provide everything under the sun or do whatever it takes to provide everything under the sun for their kid. And I think any player that's played like a high level or decent level or any level at all, let's just say that, has had a really awesome support system to be that player. So for me as a player, definitely my mom and my dad. As a coach, gosh, there's so many mentors that I look to that I appreciate that have allowed me to be this kind of coach. And this may sound like, how could that be? Because there's, you know, but I really think like my wife has been the biggest proponent of the way I coach. And only because coaching information, coaching knowledge, coaching experiences, for me, those come and go. Like, that's not to take away from any of the experiences or coaches or mentors that I've come in contact with, because, again, I could give another whole hour talking about all the different mentors, all the different experiences and perspectives that I've taken on from all the coaches that have given me any time, 30 seconds to, you know, however long, right? But my wife has been the best mirror of like, you've been a little bit too hard. Hey, you're a little bit too tight. You're not thinking about it this way, and really challenging me and pushing me outside of a futsal perspective and outside of a soccer perspective, which is actually what I need, because I need to get out of that realm in order to be my best in that realm, if that makes sense. Like, I have to be put out of it and uncomfortable in order to grow, in order to evolve. And that process is difficult. It's hard to be taken out of that thing that you know best, where your comfort zone is. She takes me out of that comfort zone. She makes it uncomfortable, and it allows me to associate with the game better. It allows me to associate with parents better and be more sympathetic and empathetic to what's happening with parents or what families go through. If they have something personal, if they have something that is just going on with their kid, it allows me to listen. And then with the kids, first of all, I mean, you know, my kids as well. I mean, I try to empathize with kids and understand where they're at without, again, getting too much rope, but also I'm just really understanding that, again, kids are kids. Like, from a day-to-day basis, I'm not in their lives as far as I'm not at school with them. I'm not doing every single little thing under the sun with them. But my wife has really helped me understand, like, people in general and how to interact with them. And I think combination of that is like my parents as well. I've always had great rapport and connection with the youth. I don't know if that's being an older sibling. I don't know if that's coming from a big extended family where you're not the oldest, but you're not the youngest, but you do have to take care of the youngest, you know, when parents aren't around and things like that. But I have this, I don't know, I have a lot of patience. I have for kids. I like trying to help. I like wanting to be a guide and a mentor. So I think, you know, my wife has really helped me get out of that realm and that space of, like, you're not just a coach. Like, that's not all you are. Like, you're not just this person. That's an aspect of who you are, but your personality is this. Like, you're this at home. You're this with your kids when you're not coaching. You're this when you're not playing. You're this when you are playing. So I think as a coach, like, my biggest impact and my biggest person that's, like, really pushed me to get uncomfortable is the person who knows, you know, with respect, doesn't know, like, compared to all the other mentors and guides that I've had, doesn't know as much about the game. And that is a perspective that's so valuable, where I can learn from someone that knows virtually not as much as I know about the game. And that really humbles me, you know, because I'm taking a completely different look at it and a completely different view of it. And that's, after a little while, when you start looking at the same thing over and over again, I crave, like, that's why I crave learning and trying to be a little bit different all the time. Because I crave that different perspective. I want to see it someone else's way. Like, I want my values and views to be broken so I can see something different. Not necessarily brighter, but different. And really, I think that's how you connect with people. And that's, again, a huge piece of me as a player, me as a coach. But yeah, those are definitely my two influences for, you know, what you have here before.
As we wrap up the second episode with Coach Brendan, I really hope you guys take what he has to say. In these two episodes, we cover a lot of information. In this last one, we talk about his foot sole, his Project 217, and everything else. And if you listen to what he has to say and try to apply it to your players, like I try to apply this stuff to my kids, me as a dad, as a husband, as a coworker, this stuff all applies off the pitch as much as it does on the field. And as we go through our day, I hope you listen to what Brendan has to say about all this and really take to heart what his message is, and look him up, follow him on social media, follow his projects that he's working on, follow his game. It's unbelievable watching what these players are doing and these coaches are doing today.
Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.